Do you ever consume so much of somebody's work that you feel like you know them personally, but you've never actually talked to them?
Yeah.
That's how I feel with our next guest. That's John McWhorter. He's a linguist and professor at Columbia University and author of the new book, Nine Nasty Words, and he joins us. Now, John, nice to finally speak with you, and thanks for being on the show this morning.
Nice to meet you. Thank you.
Nice to meet you. You've got nine nasty words, and I also want to get into the issues around race with you, because you had such a great appearance on Bill Maher's show last week, and I'd love to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But first,
thank you.
This book, Nine Nasty Words, you've kind of been framing it in somewhat as an update to George Carlin's Seven Dirty Words That Can't Be Said on Television. Yes, we're on FCC-regulated radio this morning, so we're going to try and talk around a lot of this. But tell us, how have curse words changed over time?
Well, way back in the day, it starts with blasphemy. It starts with being about God and Jesus and the idea that saying, oh my God, is taking the Lord's name in vain. Then you go through a phase that we're really just out of, where the way that you are most profane is with words about sex and the body. And those are a lot of the classic four-letter words that you learn not to use and then, frankly, use quite often, most of us. And then in our era, what's become profanity, although we don't call it that, just like we don't call a tomato a fruit, is slurs against groups. And so these days, say the N-word is profanity in the way that a certain word beginning with F was profanity 50 years ago.
You know, I think we've kind of lost the art of cursing. Like, if you go back and you look at some of the old curse words that used to be in, like, in Victorian times, and every now and then, you know, I come across some of these, and one of them I love, Gads Budlikins, Art Farfanarf, Rantallion, you know, he's a beard splitter, you know, like, these things, these words, I think are hilarious.
Yes.
And I just think that we're just so much more creative with their curse words, and there's almost an art to it, and we've lost, I hate to put it this way, we've lost that art.
They used to have multiple syllables, in other words. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, like, those words don't fly off the tongue, and I love it.
Just like we don't wear hats and petticoats anymore, and we don't do dances with formal steps. There's an informality in the culture, and it means that being artful with the language in that deliberate way isn't as fashionable as it was until roughly the late 1960s. And so that means we're just less flowery about everything. And yeah, that includes how you use profanity.
Let me just, because I think this is a nice way to segue to the race issues, you do concentrate on the N-word, as you said, in the book, as one of the nine nasty words that you bring up. And one of the interesting things you've been saying about the N-word is, like, there's a, you know, obviously it occupies a very unique space in the language where we all kind of use that euphemism, N-word, to describe it. And you've been talking about it to an extent that you almost think it's been overly empowered by that, by the way we reference it. What do you mean?
Well, what I mean by that, and I should say that the N-word is one chapter out of 11 in the book. I want listeners to know that it's not one more grim book written by a black person about, you know, unpleasant things. Mostly the book is meant to be funny and fizzy, but there is a chapter about the N-word where I would have to say that, you know, to euphemize it that way all the time, it feels to me as if we're saying that someone like me, a black man, is so delicate that I can't even hear anybody refer to the word. You know, it's one thing to have it used, but to be able to talk about it, usually to criticize it, it used to be, you know, as late as the 1990s, that you could say the word as long as everybody knew that you weren't using it, you were just referring to it. We've gotten to the point, though, where there's a taboo on the word, and that's what I mean by that it is now our profanity in the same way as those words were that you got your mouth washed out with soap about. I got my mouth washed out with soap for saying, I imagine we're allowed to say this on the air, hell, in 1970. And my mother meant it. It was still a really bad word. Now you would get that treatment for something like the N-word if somebody said it out loud. And that's because it's changed in status. But yeah, I think that it's at the point where it's treated as such a taboo that it implies that black people are more delicate than we are. However, there are many black people who would disagree with me on that.
Yeah, and you brought that up on Bill Maher's show. You said it's not the default in the black community to think of ourselves as pathetic. And we talk about that a lot on this show, because you go on to say that, yes, we can't has never been the slogan for black America, and it's not now. But it seems to be as if we're using language to almost empower the soft racism from the left.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately true. What we're taught from the left, and they mean this as beneficent, is that we black people cannot really cope until there's this major psychological change in society. And my feeling is just that we're the first people to have ever required that in order to succeed. It would be interesting to have a psychological revolution in society, and I think there already has been one in terms of racism the way it was 50 or 100 years ago. But I think we're taught that we need to seek revolution in psychology rather than just coping with things the way they are on the ground. And language can be part of that. And one of them is you may not utter a certain sequence of sounds or a certain sequence of syllables. If you do, I'm going to fall to pieces and watch me do it. I think that there's a performative aspect to that that I would like to see the energy shunted out of into really changing the lives of people out on the ground. And that's not the linguist me, that's the race commentator me.
Yeah. Professor, do you have a few more minutes for us? Can we talk about that race, the race commentary in a moment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Well, more with John McWhorter in just a second. He's generous with his time. 7:43 on WMAL.
105.9 FM.
I love that you offer different opinions.
Washington's Mall, WMAL.
That's really important to us.
Where Washington comes to talk.
That's really important to us.
Where Washington comes to talk.
Tell me what is or is not racist. Look at me. I had to come down here today to tell you to your face that we are coming together and we are strong. This will not be the last. Greet and meet, respectfully.
Wild Loudoun County School Board meeting earlier this week. A black parent, Chantel Cooper, upset that the school system there is infusing critical race theory into the curriculum and teaching students to judge each other on the basis of their skin color. Our guest right now is linguist and professor at Columbia University, John McWhorter. He's got a great new book out called Nine Nasty Words. And John, hearing that mother's passion about what's going on in her school system really catches our attention. When we talk about critical race theory in the schools, should we be as concerned as we are? I mean, we've talked about it a lot. Is it that dire of a situation?
Yes, it is. There are educators and teachers who have decided that it's the most important thing in the world to show that they are not racist. And I'm going to cough. What it means is that they feel like the entire curriculum ought to have this new conception of anti-racism, not just as one element, but as its focus. And if your whole curriculum is based on teaching black people that they're oppressed and white people that they're oppressors, it's not education. That's not what it is to teach people to think for themselves. That's not what it is to teach people that there are things to think about other than themselves and a certain single narrow issue. It's an indoctrination that really sounds like something happening in China in the 50s and 60s, although it's in English and the words are different and it doesn't involve physical torture. And so it really does need to be battled, and it needs to be battled in particular by black people. Because the idea is that all of this is somehow helping black people, when really it would be saddling black people as well as white people with lousy education. These are people who don't know it, but they're zealots. They're zealots in the garb of people with degrees in education, and we must make sure that they cannot come after our children.
You know, and this has spread to all over the world. You see it in England and France and Italy, Hungary, Brazil, Germany. You see it all over, and it came from here. It came from the United States, and you see that this idea of racism is okay as long as the white people are being blamed. Then it's okay to be racist. That's fine, because that's not racism. We're educating. It's education. But yet Chris Rufo points out that critical race theorists are scared. They won't actually have a debate about this. You know, these parents in Loudoun, there was no debate. She got 1 minute to speak her piece, and then she was dismissed. That's it. There's no debate on this. And I think as you're saying, and you're seeing more and more people of color who are coming forward and are saying, this is wrong, this is racist, I think that eventually this all tumbles down because the left won't debate it. Am I wrong in seeing how this is going to play out?
Well, yeah, they don't see the need to debate because they think that they have achieved a kind of supreme moral clarity, and they figure that to debate is to debate with somebody over, for example, you know, why pedophilia is okay. And so what it means is we have to think of these people as basing their whole ideology on a single thing. If you threaten them, they call you a racist on Twitter. That's what it is. They say you're a racist in a very public forum. That scares most people down to their socks. All of us have to get used to them making that kind of noise and then walking on, continuing to criticize and resist. And of course, that's going to be easier with people of color. You know, it's harder to call a black person a racist. You can say that a black person is self-hating, but you don't really believe it. And so I really do think that black America has to stand up to this as much as white America. And we have to realize that those people are going to call you a racist on Twitter. And we have to get used to it and keep on yelling so that they sit back down at the table.
John McWhorter's improved my life a lot. I've consumed a lot of the things that he's written and talked about, and he will yours too if you pick up his new book, Nine Nasty Words. He's also got another book on the way. What's the other book that you're writing, sir?
Well, the other book is called Woke Racism, and that will be out sooner rather than later, but we're not allowed to talk about that because we're interested in seeing Nine Nasty Words do as well as it can.
Okay, good.
So
okay.
It's an abstraction at this point.
Well, this one will whet your appetite.
Will happen.
Yes, Nine Nasty Words, a great book from a great author. John McWhorter, thanks for spending some time with us this morning, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, 751 WMAL.